Dancing with Michael Cohen. This is More Compelling Talk Radio, 1320 WILS.
And we're back. It is 6:33 on a Wednesday evening. I'm Michael Cohen with producer James Plady. Thanks for sticking around with us. Hey, if you have any comments or questions, send us an email. It's capitalcityrecap@gmail.com. Well, a court-ordered blood test released today showing that State Representative Bob Janetsky's blood alcohol level was 0.08 about an hour and a half after his drunk driving arrest in East Lansing. That was on January 19th, and that was done by an MSU police officer. But what does that exactly mean for him, and what would it mean for you if you were in that predicament? The man who knows is Patrick Barone, a Michigan DUI attorney with more than 20 years of experience. Patrick, thank you very much for joining us this evening.
You're very welcome. I'm happy to be here.
So there's the breathalyzer test, which may have questionable results, and then there's this blood test. Is the blood test the final word on that key 0.08 or above number when it comes to the courts?
Well, absolutely not. There are a variety of reasons why even a blood test could result in an inaccurate blood alcohol level.
So is the reality then that any kind of number that comes up on a breathalyzer test or a blood test can be argued, and somehow that kind of an arrest can be reversed completely, and you could say, look, this was not above a 0.08?
Oh, absolutely. Scientifically, there's no measuring device or no measuring methodology that results in perfection. There's always the possibility that there could be any variety of reasons why either breath or blood test results can be wrong.
Well, no kidding. That sounds like a playground for an attorney. So what kind of approach do you take? If your client is there and they've been, they came up with a 0.09 on a breathalyzer or maybe a blood test, what kind of an angle would you take to tell the judge that's not an accurate number?
Well, every case is different and every individual is different. But the first thing that I'm going to look for would be inconsistencies in the police report as it relates to the observations that were made by the police officer at the roadside. So if I have a client who appears to not look impaired or intoxicated, that causes me to question the breath or blood test.
Well, simple as that. And that'll actually qualify, it'll actually disqualify the result of a blood test or a breathalyzer test?
Well, there are two theories that the prosecutor can use in a drunk driving case to try to obtain a conviction. One is called the common law theory, and that means that the prosecutor must show that the person's ability to operate was substantially lessened. And they can do that based on everything other than the breath or blood test. So if the person was unable to perform well on the field sobriety test, they had bad driving, slurred speech, etc., that, if the jury accepts it, can be enough for the prosecutor to prove that the person was drunk driving based on the common law theory. On the other hand, when it comes to the statutory theory, what we refer to as the per se theory, that's that the driver's blood or breath test was above a 0.08. In other words, they had an unlawful bodily alcohol level. That requires a breath or blood test. So in order to defend the breath or blood test, of course, we're looking at some problem with the testing protocol itself, some human error as it relates to the methodology employed, or a problem with the individual in particular. So, for example, with breath testing, a person can have a contaminated breath sample because they have in their body a molecule that looks to the machine like alcohol but is not alcohol. That would be contamination or an interference
Sounds remarkable. Now, let me ask you, though, how often do these cases actually go to trial? I mean, are they typically worked out and is some kind of a plea deal usually found before it goes to a jury?
Oh, in the vast majority of cases throughout the state of Michigan, the drunk driving cases are resolved through plea negotiations. And the typical reduction in the operating while intoxicated case is to an operating while visibly impaired. It's a relatively minor reduction. But there are a number of cases, a percentage of cases, where the individual elects to go to trial. And in my practice in particular, we probably take about a quarter of our cases to trial.
Wow, okay. Operating while visually impaired, that is not a, I mean, that doesn't have all the penalties that go along with a DUI, right?
Well, actually, the penalties are almost exactly the same. And there's really sort of three categories of consequences that can apply for any drunk driving conviction, whether impaired or intoxicated. And those are the penalties that are imposed by the court, which we would think of as the punitive sanctions, which include jail time. Mm-hmm. The sanctions that are imposed by the Secretary of State, which are the driver's license sanctions. And then there's what I refer to as the collateral consequences of the conviction. So, I mean, if you look at the representative's case in particular, there are a variety of collateral consequences that evolve out of the conviction, but that are not imposed by the court or the Secretary of State. He could eventually be voted out of office because he gets convicted. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's a possibility. That's a collateral consequence. The only difference in those three categories between impaired or intoxicated relate to the driver's license sanctions. For impaired driving, it's a 90-day restricted license for impaired. For intoxicated, it's a 30-day no driving followed by 150 days of restricted driving privileges. Otherwise, for all practical purposes, they're the same.
Well, I'm talking to Patrick Barona, Michigan DUI attorney, over 20 years of experience representing those who have gotten into that predicament. So let's look at a situation. You've had a few drinks and you get pulled over. Probably the first question you're going to hear is, sir, have you been drinking tonight? I'm guessing the answer is, you know, I had two beers a few hours ago. Is that the right response?
The right response presumably is the truth. The right response is that you've not had enough to drink to be over the legal limit or to be impaired or intoxicated. But the officer's going to smell the alcohol, so it's almost futile to deny that you've had anything to drink. Although, of course, you don't have an obligation to answer the police officer's questions. You have a Fifth Amendment right, really, to remain silent. You have to identify yourself and provide the police officer with your driver's license, registration, proof of insurance, but as far as answering any investigatory questions, you can simply decline to answer
those. If you've had a couple drinks, you're not sure where your blood alcohol level might be, do you avoid taking the breathalyzer test at the road? Do you avoid doing the sobriety test, the physical ones?
Well, you are legally obligated to take the test at the roadside. So let's make sure that your listeners understand that. However, if you decline to take the test at the roadside, the only consequence is a fine. There's no points and no driver's license sanctions for the roadside breath test. So you may make the decision to not allow the police to collect that evidence from you and say no, recognizing that in doing so, you're violating the law and that you will be charged with a civil infraction with no points and no driver's license sanction. If you refuse the one at the station, that's a whole different story. That will result in a one-year suspension of your driver's license and 6 points added to your driving record.
What about the physical roadside test? Should you decline to take that if you're not sure how you'll do?
Yeah, there's no legal obligation at all to take those tests.
Okay.
So those you can simply say no, there's no penalty whatsoever.
So the second breathalyzer test, you could potentially lose your license for, you're saying, a year or have it suspended for a year?
Correct.
So at that point, you may want to, your advice would be go ahead and take that second breathalyzer test.
That's right. In almost all instances, because in Michigan, if you say no to that test and agree to essentially allow or forfeit your license, then they will get a warrant and they'll draw your blood. Now, just so your listeners understand, if you do refuse the station's breath test and your license is suspended, you can still appeal that suspension and you may be able to get restricted driving privileges, but there's no guarantee of that.
You know, it wasn't until the early 1990s that states began individually adopting this 0.08 legal limit for BAC. Having seen so many people go through the system for drinking and driving, do you think that this 0.08 blood alcohol level is appropriate for a DUI conviction, or is it too low?
Well, look, it wasn't that long ago when the legal limit in many states was 0.15, if you can believe that, 0.15. It was reduced to 0.10 and now to 0.08. Probably, as in Colorado and other states, we're going to be at 0.05 You know, the question is really how low can we go? But if you're asking me if most people are impaired or intoxicated at 0.08, there's just too much individual variability, which I think makes a statutory legal limit wrong.
From what you've seen in the cases you've handled, how often are drivers basically in full control of their vehicle? They're maybe very slightly over that limit, and they end up getting charged with a DUI.
Well, the majority of people that I see in my office are 0.12, 0.13, 0.15, usually between about a 0.12 and a 0.20. But there are certainly a number of drivers who are pulled over very close to or even right at the legal limit. Those people typically don't exhibit any signs or symptoms of intoxication or impairment because they're not, which is why I think the legal limit is too low.
Finally, if you're charged with a DUI, should you be ready to pay $10,000 to deal with it?
When all is said and done, it depends on how you want to do the calculation. When all is said and done, it could easily be more than that. Some lawyers charge more than that just for the lawyer's fee. And then, of course, there's the court-ordered fines and costs, the increasing your insurance, there's driver's license responsibility fees, it goes on and on. So $10,000 is definitely a very realistic amount.
Patrick Barone, Michigan DUI attorney. Over 20 years of experience. Patrick, thank you very much for joining us this evening. Interesting information.
You're very welcome. Thank you.